those who weren't here before. This is Hawkwind's song, his ode to our fundamental nature, to this practice which leads us to understand, to get, to feel our fundamental nature, our Buddha nature. And he starts it where Zen practice starts. You are Buddha, just as surely as ice is water. There is no ice that is not water. You are Buddha like that. Even though you and I tend to forget, because all we can really remember is being ice. We don't have a good memory of when we were frozen, of that fluid water element. And in a way, we're all chiseled into, you know, our own shapes of Jose and Bernetta and Koshin. We have all of our ice shapes, belying the fact that, and obscuring the fact that we are in fact flowing water. And there is this fundamental point that I'm always on about, that both of those things exist at the same time. We are both ice and water. And there is an aspect of ourselves which just flows, doesn't get stuck, just takes whatever is coming. Walking around the Kinhin path, whatever comes, I'm taking it. I'm going with it. And I'm untroubled by whatever comes. There is this aspect of ourselves which is just like that, that's going on all the time. And it's not an aspect that we have to pluck out of the air. It's really, it's a birthright of ours. It's an aspect that is as much a part of us as water is ice. And the whole practice, all these practices, are just to wise up to that. Because in Zen, the fundamental problem that we address is not sin. It is ignorance. That's the main problem. It's just ignorance. So, the next line here is lost on dark paths of ignorance. We wander through the six worlds from dark path to dark path. When shall we be freed from birth and death? We're on a dark path. We don't see clearly. We don't see this aspect of ourselves. You know, you could say we ignore it, take playing off the word ignorance, that we ignore that aspect of ourselves. Not because we're mean or stupid. I mean, it's just that life is so much more interesting. Our cell phones are much more interesting than this quiet self. They seem a lot more relevant. All of the pressures and decisions and loves and dislikes seem a lot more relevant, a lot more central to our story than this very quiet, subtle force that Zen asks us to discover. So, you know, it's no mistake that we kind of say that you have to start with saying there is this other thing, there's this other part of you that's worth finding. Just trust me on this. That's the way it starts. just trust me, it's worth finding. But in order to find it, we've got to shed a whole bunch of other stuff. Basically, we have to shed all of the stuff of our life. So that's why we come to a quiet place like this, to shed all of that and become wise, which is to say, you know, become hip to feel this other aspect, which is so quiet. That's the thing. It's like it's shy. So you've got to approach it calmly, you know? Otherwise it'll flit away. So we have to get calm. We have to become calm so that we can feel it. But then, as we become calm, and you can feel this as the retreat goes on, that that place in yourself that is okay with not thinking, that Buddha nature, has a pull of its own, has a kind of gravity of its own. At first, all the gravity is about pulling from, you know, all around you. But as we quiet down, that place has its own gravity. That, if we can trust it and feel it, pulls us in to itself. It's an imperfect metaphor, but one that sometimes I use, which is that it feels like at a retreat like this, it takes a lot of energy to, we're leaving our home, you know, the earth. It takes a lot of energy to get blast off out of earth and get into space. It just takes a lot of work. But then once we're there, there's this star way out there that somebody said was worth going to visit. As we get closer to it, it pulls us in. It has its own gravity, its own pull. So we are lost on dark paths of ignorance and wander through the six worlds from dark path to dark path. When ever are we going to be freed? This is a reference to an old concept in Buddhism, really old. Maybe even before Buddhism, I was reading about the six worlds, the six realms of existence. And, you know, the idea that we transmigrate, we go through these worlds, and in classical Buddhism, the idea is to get off of that wheel, to get off of it altogether, and not go from, you know, the word samsara means wandering, literally means wandering. So wandering from life to life, wandering from state to state. Those six worlds are the top, and most of them are bad, of these six worlds. Only one is any good. The top one is the world of the gods. You might think that would be the best, but it's not. Because everybody's lazy up there. Nobody wants to work. And so they don't practice, they just, it's a kind of seductive place. I can feel that myself sometimes. You know, things are good and they're just eating their grapes and nobody's getting any better. And then the next one down is the world of the devas, demigods, and the sloth is the primary attribute of the gods. The devas are jealousy. They're all envious of each other because they want to move up to that top slot. And they're envious of those guys and they're fighting each other. The next one down is the human world. Now that's the good one. It's the best one because it's a balance between ease and suffering. And we can actually, we have this ability in the human world to become bodhisattvas. We have this ability to transform our suffering into a better state. So we have, that's the balanced place. Below that is animals, the world of animals. That's the world of desires, kind of, that you can't, that you just follow your desires. And below that is the hungry ghosts, which are these, we should really add that to our ritual at the meal, you know, adding the offering to the hungry ghost, which I did for many years, and in which you offer to the hungry ghost so they, it's a little bit of food, so that they won't come after you. Because the hungry ghosts have huge mouths and huge stomachs, swollen stomachs, and tiny necks. So they're always hungry, but they can't satisfy themselves. So that's kind of, that's their world. Or is it our world? So then the next one down is the hell realms, and that's where everybody's angry at each other fighting. So, you know, it's a crapshoot. It's a roulette wheel. And the idea is to, the old idea is to get off that wheel altogether. Here it is, the wheel. This is a, you know, you can't see anything, but just imagine. There it is, a wheel. And it's divided into six. This one is funny because 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I think these are the gods and the devas. And it's pretty obvious when you look at it carefully which are the humans and animals. In the middle is greed, anger, and ignorance. The snake, cock, and pig. And they kind of keep the whole thing turning. But in this one, and in many of these Tibetan ones, there is a Buddha in each one. And if you look carefully, it's like, where's Waldo? There he is. Yeah, and there, and there, and there, and there, and there. So there's six of them. There's a Buddha in each realm. And that's what we believe in the Zen school, that there's a Buddha in each one of those realms. That you don't have to get off the wheel. That in all of our aspects of life, there is a Buddha. That the Buddha is there, even in the hell realm. Oh man, I don't want to do this retreat. I feel so bad. I haven't been practicing. I got all this crap I've got to deal with. I should just stay home. Come up with some kind of excuse. And then you go to the retreat, and there it is. The Buddha was right there, in the midst of the hell realm. Even though you've got a lot of stuff going on, there's the Buddha. That's one of the reasons that we suggest you practice every day, or at least on some kind of regular schedule, even if it's once a week at a certain time. Because you go through all kinds of, this wheel keeps turning. You're going to go through God times and Deva times and hell times and greedy times. And to sit, to come back to the cushion regularly so that we encounter that, we at least try to find the Buddha in all of those realms. When we're really suffering, when we're happy. When we're in a hell realm for, well, I find breakdowns can help to find the Buddha. It's like you're, you know, if you're in a car going to your destination, speeding along, and you break down. At first, there's a lot of energy around fixing that situation, making calls. And then there's, and of course, worrying about the appointment you're going to miss. And then there's just nothing more to do. Now this is my situation. I have embraced hell. And if we keep fighting, then we won't find the Buddha. But if we can relax with this hell realm the way it is, then we can find it. I guess it would be like rushing off to the ferry. Maybe that's a better example. You know, gotta get this appointment, and I had to do a bunch of stuff before I left, so I'm 15 minutes later than I was wanted to be. And you get there, and there's a big long line at the top of the hill. And then all you can do, you can keep stewing about it if you want. But the other possibility is to embrace your messed up situation and just, okay, there's the Buddha. Happens in a retreat too, you know. The people around you have, you know, somebody has a whistle in their nose and somebody else is slamming the door and all kinds of things are wrong. The temperature is all wrong. It's too cold. Okay, well, I have those conversations all the time. But then, at some point, we can continue to fight that fight if we want to, or we can just not get things perfect, not get things the way we want them. That's the thing about a retreat. We don't get to do that. You know, we're just kind of stuck. We can't say, hey, shut up. We're not allowed to do that. We just without modifying our environment, we're asked to find the Buddha without doing that. You know, because normally we just modify. And now we don't get to. So that's the six worlds. And how can we become freed from like living and dying through all of those different worlds, which we do in one lifetime? Well, the way is Zazen. That's what Hakuin says. Yeah, that's the path. Zazen will get you there. Really knowing, Zazen is the tool. The Zazen of the Mahayana. To this the highest praise. He says, devotion, repentance, training, the many paramitas all have their source in Zazen. We in the Zen school, we talk about our whole lives being sourced, that the source of our life is Buddha, is Buddha nature. And, it's what we came from, and it's what we'll return to, that quiet. So getting used to it is connecting us to something fundamental. But also, we say, I mean, what Hakuin's saying here is that all of this stuff that we're doing, all the bowing and the, you know, walking and the studying that we do, the taking precepts, which is part of the paramitas, morality, all of that we do is based on Zazen. It has its root in Zazen. And that's something for us to remember as Zen practitioners, because as we get good at the form, as we get good at all these different forms, it really is possible to forget that we've got to come back to Zazen over and over again, and that these things are aids, but that the fundamental thing is losing ourself. So no matter how good we look walking around in a retreat, If we're forgetting to do zazen, really, honestly, like I said, Hakuin was honest with himself, honestly asking ourselves, you know, are we really working our way toward quiet? No, and you know, gosh, if you're new in this, probably you are. But, you know, us old farts, we can forget to really push that, to go deeper, to go, to get quieter than we've been before, to, because we're kind of good at the, we look good. So we can forget that we're called to honestly pursue a deeper and fuller understanding of ourselves as Buddha. And we owe that to ourselves and to the people around us, the people in our lives. Those, one last word about those practices, though, they're important too. Sometimes, if anything, normally I catch myself thinking, you know, it's not all about zazen, because it's also about these other things help incorporate the zazen experience into our life. And that's a really important aspect too. So, you know, it's really hard to do zazen, to find that quiet nature. As I said, it's shy. But that's not even enough. The next thing is we've got to incorporate it. That's again like Hakuin said. We've got to incorporate it into our life. We've got to move with it. We've got to move back and forth in our life between the craziness of our life and the quiet of our fundamental nature. We've got to learn to do that too. Those who try zazen even once, okay, now here's the section where he really, you know, maybe you could say oversells zazen. But you know, he's singing a song there, and he believes it. He believes in this way. Those who try zazen even once wipe away beginningless crimes. Just once. Well, you know, or is it an oversell? There is a forgiveness in this practice of zazen that is striking to me. When we can really sit, I use that example of coming to retreat when the world's falling apart, when your world's falling apart. Part of the process of getting quiet, really, is embracing that suck, embracing that those horrible aspects of yourself. Otherwise, you won't get past them. You won't get down to quiet. And as we get quiet, one of the qualities of coming back from that quiet, for me, is a feeling of forgiveness. It's okay. I'm okay. I've made lots of mistakes, and this moment is okay. And that allows me to start again, to resurrect and start again, fresh. Back in the world, in a way, it stops karma. And that's another way of looking at zazen, is that it's temporarily, in fact, getting, now I've used the Buddha in the wheel. It's finding that Buddha, and it's stopping karma. And we have to go back to it, but for a moment, it's washed away. And that moment really means something, because it allows us to come back forgiven So I think there might be something to this one. Yeah, yeah. Where are all the dark, dark paths then when we have been washed in the water of Buddha nature? The pure land itself is near. Those who hear this truth even once and listen with a grateful heart, treasuring it, revering it, gain blessings without end. There we go. Even just hearing it once. Well, to give Hakuin the benefit of the doubt, again, with this one, I guess the truth for me in this, though it's not exactly the same as this, is that to reorient your life, even if you do this practice poorly, even if you don't really get very quiet, you know, on a retreat, the reorienting toward that quiet place, and the, in a way, like the choosing to give reverence to that instead of a whole bunch of other things, makes a difference. And I tell myself that after a really crummy retreat, you know. Well, that didn't work very well. I thought it was going to work. I'd gotten my life all together before this one. And then, but if nothing else, I'm reorienting. I'm telling myself that I'm reorienting my life toward this. And that reorientation has real value, I believe. And much more, those who turn around, you know, turn a different direction, and bear witness to self-nature, the self-nature that is no nature, and go far beyond mere doctrine. So there, he says, even more, those who really witness it, who really feel it, who really get a feeling for this Buddha nature, who can hear it, who can get quiet enough to hear it, even a little bit, to bear witness to it, to go and see it, to find it yourself. It's not enough to read about it. It's not enough to, he says, just to hear it is enough. And that there is some truth to that, that helps, I think. You know, for a nightstand Buddhist who reads Pema Chodron at night, and that's it. That can really help, I think, reorient one. But even more if you can go and do a retreat and find some taste for it and get a taste. Little by little, we get a taste for this other thing. It seems so bland at first and boring, you know, this Buddha nature search. But little by little, we can gain a taste for it. And then I think that's a way of blessing. You know, blessings flow from that. Not just for us. Maybe not even primarily for us, but for the people that we interact with, the people in our lives. So, keep humming this song. Aaron, you're going to put this to music one day, right? Yeah, thanks for coming. And I promised that yesterday. that Erin was going to come, and I knew the only reason she was coming was so she could read this and not do zazen, but just think about what the right tune should be. So I want you to do that the whole time. Just have that as your concentration. I really don't want you to do that the whole time. I really want you to do zazen. But later, it would be fun to set this to some kind of a tune. In the meantime, you know, let's you and me both do our best to really bear witness to this quiet, retiring, shy part of our nature that the Zen school says is such an important thing to find.